Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 19, Text 34. What to speak of hearing the pastimes of the Lord, whose chest is marked with Srivat, so people may take transcendental pleasure even in hearing of the works and deeds of the devotees, whose fame is immortal. Purport. Bhagavatam literally means the pastimes of the Lord and the Lord's devotees. For example, there are pastimes of Lord Krishna and narrations of devotees like Prahlad, Dhruva, and Maharaj Ambarish. Both pastimes pertain to the Supreme Personality of Godhead because the devotees' pastimes are in relation with Him. The Mahabharata, for example, the history of the Pandavas and their activities, is sacred because the Pandavas had a direct relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhagavan means the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Bhagavat means that which is in relationship with Him. Ek Bhagavata Bharo, Bhagavata Shastra, Ar Bhagavat Bhakta Bhakti Rasa Patra. The two kinds of Bhagavat, of which the one is considered, one is stated here to be greater, that is the book Bhagavat, and the other is the devotee, is also called Bhagavat, because Hare Krishna, he is the receptacle or the abode of bhakti ras, loving exchanges in devotional service with Krishna. So the Grantha Bhagavat or book Bhagavat is greater, that is Bhagavan actually, in relation to Bhagavan, and also Bhagavan, this is the literary incarnation of God. Bhagavatam is non-different from Krishna. Krishna Tula Bhagavat Vibhu Sarvashray Prati Shloke Prati Akkare Nana Artha Koi. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that Bhagavatam, book Bhagavatam, is equal to the Supreme Lord. As He is powerful, Bhagavatam is powerful. As Krishna Himself can give all shelter to all, so the Bhagavat. And in every verse and in every syllable, so many meanings may be found, although of course ultimately all meanings pertain only to Krishna and pure devotional service. Prabhupada often used to say that the person Bhagavat is even more important than the book Bhagavat, which appears to contradict the statement which I just quoted of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. But ontologically we can understand that the devotee, he has to follow the Bhagavat. He cannot be a devotee without following the Bhagavat. He is understood in terms of the Bhagavata Shastra. Not that the devotee will make the Shastra, but the Shastra defines how a devotee is a devotee. But from our perspective, so the Bhagavat, the devotee is subordinate to Bhagavan and to Shastra. But from our perspective, the devotee is even more important because we have no access to the, from the conditioned soul perspective, we have no access. Is there any sound coming from this? Hare Krishna, it doesn't seem like it. We have no access to the truth of the Bhagavat, Bhagavat Tattva Vigyan, without going through the devotee. The devotee delivers Bhagavan. Krishna Shri Tomar, Krishna Dite Paro, Tomara Shakati Ache. Devotee gives Krishna. Devotee gives Bhagavatam. Once Prabhupada was asked about this, why the devotee Bhagavat is considered more, why Prabhupada gave this and more important than the book Bhagavat, Prabhupada said, because he can pull your ear. Bhagavat we may take or leave, but the devotee won't allow us. He'll scold us, you rascal, why are you not Krishna conscious? Pularya, out of his kindness. So Bhagavatam is the narrations of Krishna and his devotees. Everything about Krishna is none different from him. So Bhagavatam is his narrations of his Naam, Gun, Roop, Leela. So none different from him. And devotees also appear in Bhagavatam. So Bhagavatam is none different from the devotees also. As Prabhupada notes, in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, in the first canto, the fourth chapter or fifth chapter, says that in the description of Narad Muni coming to Vyasa Devi, he refers to Narad Muni, who has so kindly appeared in these pages of Bhagavatam. So by studying Bhagavatam, we can associate with all the great devotees because they're present therein. Prabhupada, of course, he said that if you want to know me, read my books. Then Prabhupada is here also. He's speaking to us through the pages of his books. And also all the previous acharyas, because Sarva Deva Mayo Guru, the Guru is the representative of all the great personalities, all the demigods, all the previous acharyas. And because every acharya in his commentary, he, especially Prabhupada has done this, has distilled the essence of the previous acharyas of commentaries. So Prabhupada said that by reading my books, one gets in touch with the previous acharyas. Because all their realizations, all their explanations, he's given the essence of that. He would study the commentaries of previous acharyas and then give his commentary, as is required for us, what we require to know, what is most important for us. Because there are so many commentaries on Bhagavatam. Prabhupada studied 13 in giving his commentary. There are 12, he had these big books with 12 Sanskrit commentaries that comes in one book. And then he'd also study the commentary of his own Guru Maharaj in Bengali, which again, that in the commentaries of previous acharyas are there. So at different stages of commenting on the Bhagavatam, he would follow different commentaries more than others, but he accessed all the previous acharyas. And then with direct inspiration from Krishna, Prabhupada said, Krishna is telling me what to write. He's standing with me. So in this way, Prabhupada gave his commentaries by which we can come in contact with all these great personalities, the greatest personalities. Purushottama, the greatest of all personalities, is the personality of Godhead. And so many great personalities, measured not in terms of their, here we see the names are given of Prahlad Maharaj, Dhruv Maharaj, Ambarish Maharaj, their greatness is not measured herein in Bhagavatam in terms of their ability to rule over the world. The Bhagavat concept of greatness is not in terms of one's ability to imitate the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Greatness in this material world, one is considered great as much as he falsely demonstrates the potencies of the Supreme Lord. Aishwaryasya, Samagrasya, Viryasya, Yashasya, Shriya, Jnana Vairagya Yoschayanap Chaiva, Shandang Bhaga Itingina. The qualities of the Supreme. He has unlimited qualities of Bhagavan, but particularly Parashara Muni has noted that the Supreme Lord is full of all wealth. Aishwaryasya, Samagrasya. All power, all fame, all beauty, all knowledge and renunciation. So anyone in this material world who has some wealth is considered a great person. Bill Gates is considered he's a great person of contemporary America and even the world. He's known throughout the world. Not that his products are great, but somehow he's been able to market them and make lots of money. So he's famous for that. Just an example. This is not the Bill Gates class, it's the Bhagavatam class. So Aishwarya says to Raja, Viryasya, who has got power, a power that may be physical strength, just like at the Olympic Games, who has got this physical strength to run faster than others, or run, lift heavier weights than others, they're considered powerful. So that's one kind of power. Another kind of power is political power. If one can dominate others and take power, then it's considered very powerful, just like this Saddam Hussein. He became great by his ability to politically subdue others. So he became a great person. Now they want to reduce him. But he was great for some time. Virya Yash, somehow or other, if one is famous, then for whatever reason, you know, people do all kinds of foolish things just to become famous. That person who shot John Lennon dead said, I wanted to become famous. That's one way to become famous. If you're in relationship with the famous, you also become famous. So people, they like to introduce, yes, I'm a friend of Bill Gates, or George Bush was my next door neighbor, or something like this. So we like to introduce that, yes, by association with others, one can, somehow or other, if one becomes famous, eat a car. Someone got put in the Guinness Book of Records for eating a car. How do you do that? Well, he had it all powdered and took a teaspoonful of car powder every day. And eventually, after some time, he ate a car. Don't know what it did to his internal system, but he got in the Guinness Book of Records. Foolish thing to do. Some kind of fame. So, if anyone who's famous, generally one becomes famous by these other opulences, but if he has these, somehow or other, if one can become famous, then that is also an opulence. Yashasha, Shriha, beauty, one who's got beauty. So like this, they have the Miss World contest and Miss Universe contest and famous fashion models and movie stars. This is the area for this, and this Los Angeles, Hollywood. The movie stars and good-looking men and women. And so they become famous. Even in history, some are famous. Like Cleopatra, thanks to Bill Shakespeare, she's become immortalized. And Juliet, were they real people, Romeo and Juliet, or is it just an imaginary story? Anyone know? I don't know either, but anyway. So, Antony and Cleopatra, so she became famous. Even Cleopatra made it to the pages of Prabhupada's Bhagavatam. She's quoted therein. That how Caesar could control a whole empire, but she controlled him just by the fluttering of her eyelids. So beauty, by beauty, one becomes famous. By knowledge, one becomes famous. Einstein, voted the man of the century by the foolish readers of Time magazine, who didn't realize that he's just a little bit more learned or intelligent in some ways, another conditioned soul. No real knowledge. Even our new bhakti of 5 days knows more about what's really worth knowing about than Einstein ever knew. But he had some knowledge, so he was considered great. And renunciation. This quality is not much, not in modern America, it's not, renunciation is not considered a quality. Rather, if one can somehow or other make others renounce by taking all their money, then by exploiting them, then one is considered great. But that's also a quality. Maybe you see, just like in, now they're fighting in Iraq, if someone takes a great risk and renounces his life for the sake of his company, for the sake of his country, for the sake of his company, for the sake of the oil companies, then that will be lauded, highly renounced. So this, those who, they're considered great by imitating the Supreme Lord, who has got all opulence in it to a degree which Bill Gates cannot imagine. Well, actually, all the wealth that any of us have, it all belongs to Krishna. All the planets belong to him. All wealth, fame, strength, knowledge, beauty, renunciation, everything is Krishna's. We are only thieves thinking I own this. So Krishna is the greatest. And devotees, they become great in relation to him. But it may be that the devotees, they also become greater than Krishna. Actually, they cannot become greater than Krishna. But if he decides to make them greater, then they're greater. No one can be greater than Krishna. No one is more powerful than him. No one is more beautiful than him. No one is more opulent than him. Everything belongs to him. But if he considers someone greater than him, then by that token they become greater than him. So actually, intrinsically, no one is greater than Krishna. They cannot become, but if he considers them greater, then they may be considered. Just like Yashoda Mai, she is tying up Krishna. Krishna is Muktida. He is the giver of liberation. But she is tying him up. So she is greater than Krishna. She is greater than Krishna, but because he allows her. Not allows, actually he has no choice. You always have to see from both sides. There's the philosophical side. Bhagavat is the book of philosophy. But also, transcending even philosophy is rasa vichara, or consideration of loving relationships. So actually Krishna, in his most intrinsic aspect, he's being himself. When Krishna is being himself, he's not being God, then there's no question. He can't defy Mother Yashoda. He is absolutely under her control. But as the Supreme Lord, which is how we see him, then he's the Supreme Controller. So both these aspects are there simultaneously. It's not really possible to fully understand simply by an academic method. But the Supreme Lord is the most powerful, but by love he is subdued. Therefore, the devotees, they become even more, even greater than Krishna. Nemam varincho nabhavo, nashir apyanga ashraya, prasadam libhiri gopi, tat prasadat vimuktidat. That Mother Yashoda got more mercy from Krishna than even Shiva or Brahma or even Lakshmi, who is always on his chest. Shiva is able to tie up Krishna, who's tying up everyone else, who controls everyone else. So this the Bhagavat cult is beyond theism, more than theism. Theism means to accept God, but mostly people accept God as their order supplier. They don't really understand. What is called theism is not actually theism. They say they believe in God, but they don't really understand who he is. They think God is an order supplier in the sky. That's all. His job is to give us this and that. But real theism begins when we understand what God wants, what we should do in relationship to him. So what he wants, he's not that interested in being God. Prabhupada told the story of William Gladstone, Prime Minister of Britain at the time of the Empire, and a man had an appointment to meet him. So he was waiting outside Gladstone's office, and the time for his appointment went, and he was waiting and waiting and waiting, and he was thinking, well, he must be doing some very important work inside his office. because he's the Prime Minister of the whole British Empire. So he thought, let me just peek in his door and see what he's doing. I may not get my chance to see him, and my appointment may just be cancelled, but let me just see him, the great man, what is he doing? So he peeked inside the office and saw William Gladstone, the Prime Minister of the whole British Empire, with multiple responsibilities, down on his hands and knees, with his young grandson on his back, saying, "Get up, horse! Get up, horse!" So he was controlling the whole empire, but he became controlled by the love of his little grandson, who made him into a horse. This Gladstone was famous for being in the Houses of Parliament, for being a formidable person. And just by staring at people, they'd start passing stool and urine. They'd become, maybe not, but they'd become very afraid. And they wouldn't know. His stare was so harsh that people just became afraid and they wouldn't know what to say. So a very stern figure. In public he was known as a very stern figure. But in private, the little child is whipping him. "Get up, horse! Gee up, gee up!" So Krishna, is he God or isn't he? It's a good point to understand, Janmashtami coming. Is he God? Yes. Is he God? No. Janma karma cha me divyame vangyo veti tatvataha tyagva deham punar janma naiti mameti sojana. One who understands that my janma and karma, birth and activities, are all transcendental. The one who properly understands this never comes to this material world, never takes birth again, but comes to join me in my janma and karma, Krishna says. So these very terms, janma and divya, karma and divya, they seem to be contradictory. Because janma means that is the condition of the material world. Krishna is not ajopi sanavyayatma bhutanam ishvaropi san prakritim swamadhishtaya sambhavamya mamayaya. Krishna says, "I am unborn." He first says, "I am unborn," and then he, "I am unborn, but I appear in this world in my original transcendental form by my own desire." So I am aja, unborn, and then janma karma, namam karmani limpanti, name karma palesbriha. I have no work to do. I have no karma to do. I have no desire of the results of activities. But I have my janma and karma. So it seems to be completely contradictory. Recently, some idiots came to see me. They wanted to point out how Bhagavad Gita is full of contradictions. So maybe it is if we don't understand. Behind the contradiction, there is harmony, which is not possible on the simply on a superfluous level of understanding. The apparent contradiction is resolved by a higher understanding. Just like in mathematics, one of the first things we learn when we go beyond our times tables is that there's no square root of a negative integer. It's not possible, because if you multiply any negative integer by any other negative integer, then minus times minus equals plus. It becomes positive. So that's an axiom in mathematics. But then if you go to higher mathematics, then the... better watch out what I'm saying here. I only got this from Sadaputta, so if I'm wrong, argue with him. So in higher mathematics, the square root of -1 is required for solving various problems. So how is it possible that at a higher level that is understood? Similarly, in physics, whatever they teach you at first, classical physics, you learn all of that. And if you want to go to higher physics, you just have to throw it all out practically. Whatever you learn, it's no longer applying. So we learn all about various the particles within the atom. And then later on you learn that there aren't any particles. There aren't any particles, there's just waves of energy. And if you try to make a particle and try and examine it, you can't find out where it is and what speed it's moving at. It's full of contradictions, apparently. But that's even in material subjects. So what to speak in the subject of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by whom all this comes into being. We can't even understand this material world. So what to speak of Him? Yatova imani bhutani jayanti yena jatani jivanti yat prayat abhishang vishanti tad brahmeti tad vijigyasasva tad brahmeti. The Supreme is that from which everything comes, by whom everything is maintained, in whom everything, by whom everything is ultimately destroyed. This is the proper subject of inquiry. This is the absolute truth, Brahma. So this apparent contradiction, Krishna is unborn, he says, then who can understand my janma and karma? This is transcendental. There's the clue. By being transcendental, janma and karma, that brings it to a different platform. When Krishna, janmashtami, Krishna's janma, but not born according to his karma, not born because of some previous residual sinful or pious reactions, but that's already said. Atma maya, sambhavami, atma maya. I come through my own desire, Krishna comes. So that's only a play, his being born in this world and his activities. Lila means just like a play. Krishna, jyote kela, sarvotam nara lila, nara bapu taha sharup. Krishna, all his activities, it is play, just like his talking, kata ganam, natyam gamanam. In the spiritual world, talking is singing, and walking is dancing. So similarly, karma, Krishna's activities, it's not like us, we have to go to some factory or office or do some work. But Krishna, all his activities simply play. That's all. Krishna jyote kela sarvotam naralila. Of all his different plays, he's playing as a fish, as a kachap, tortoise. Then as varaha, as a boar, narasimha, the man lion. As Vamanadi, the dwarf. So all these different forms of the Lord, the topmost is his, that which appears to be like human-like. Because his very, his original form is human-like, we can say. We say human-like because we consider ourselves humans, but rather man is created in the image of God. So it's not that Krishna looks like a human being, but the human being looks like Krishna. When we say Krishna's lotus feet, it doesn't mean that Krishna's feet are beautiful like a lotus, but it means that the lotus is beautiful like Krishna's feet. So from our perspective, because we're upside down, our way of thinking is back to front, we may think that Krishna's lotus feet means Krishna's feet are beautiful like a lotus. But rather it's giving some, better to see the other way around, that the lotus is glorified by being compared to Krishna's feet. Yes. So the Krishna's janma and karma, all transcendent, just a play, all play. At the same time very serious. Because by understanding Krishna's play, that it's not anything of this material world, then we no longer have to take part in this material world. But we go to join that play. We are meant for playing. Life is meant for playing, for being happy. Life is meant for fun. There's no fun in this material world. You find there's the story of Peter Pan. Wasn't it Peter Pan? He wanted never to grow up, only to be young and play all the time. He never wanted to. When you're grown up, you have so many anxieties. But a child means they just play. So Krishna, he's always young. He never grows up. He never has any headache. Never has any anxiety. Only playing. Of course, he becomes also Dwarakadhish. But that also, everything, the great anxiety of ruling the kingdom, no anxiety for Krishna. Krishna doesn't need antidepressants or stress pills or yoga stretches to relieve his stress. But everything simply enjoyable. Even when Krishna has to go to fight, that's also enjoyable. Not like the fighting of this material world where it's very nasty, but Krishna also enjoying. Someone was objecting why this Prabhupada called in Delhi the deities Radha Krishna, Radha Partha Sarati, someone who thinks himself highly elevated in rasa vichara, has objected to this, but he doesn't know. He's not anywhere near Prabhupada in rasa vichara, although he thinks he has to teach it to us, that Prabhupada didn't teach us. But Partha Sarati, why Radha Partha Sarati? Why? We don't find Partha Sarati in Vrindavan, but we find Partha Sarati, the charioteer of Arjuna, means that Prabhupada, when he was asked this, he explained that Krishna is never separate from his Hladini Shakti, his enjoying potency. Krishna is always the supreme enjoyer, whether in Vrindavan, Mathura, or Dwaraka. And even on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he cannot but think of Radha. So he's never separated. So this, all these points, how to understand. The devotee is greater than Bhagavan by the grace of Bhagavan. Bhagavan means the supreme. Purushottam means the supreme person. But this is the special insight, particularly of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. They know that even more important than worship of Krishna is worship of the devotee. And Krishna himself, in describing to Uddhava, his great devotee, the process. What does Krishna say about Uddhava? That Nacha Sankarsana. What is that verse? How does that begin? Brahma, Shiva, Sankar. Nacha. How does that verse begin about? Now I've forgotten. That Lord Brahma, I can't begin, but the last two lines I'm remembering. Nacha Sankarsana Ucha Shriya. Naivatna Cha Yatha Bhavan. Krishna says that Natata Me Priyatama Atma Yonian Nashankaraha Nacha Sankarsana Nashriya. Naivatna Cha Yatha Bhavan. Krishna says, my dear Uddhava, that Brahma, Shiva, my dear brother Balaram, Lakshmi, and even my very self are not as dear to me as you. So Uddhava, Krishna has said, you are more to me than my very self. And then when it describing to Uddhava, what is the process for worshipping me, Krishna says. How everyone can be benefited, you should follow this process of worshipping me. And he describes in great detail how to worship himself. That you bring various items for offering, and you make nice parks and gardens and festivals. all for the deity. And also, he mentions in the Mad Bhakta Puja Gatika, all these items I'm telling you for worship of me, but you worship my devotee more than me. Worship of my devotee is more than worship of me. So the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, and even more so Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, they have picked up on this point. How to satisfy Krishna. Krishna likes if his devotees are satisfied. How will his devotees be satisfied? Not by offering them sense gratification because they have no interest. But devotees will be satisfied if we, a devotee means a devotee of Krishna, so they like to hear about Krishna. So if we can facilitate them in their service to Krishna, speak to them about Krishna. This is like Madhavendra Puri in his final days in this world. He was showing the pastime of being sick. So Ishvara Puri took the opportunity to serve him physically and also speak to him about Krishna's pastimes. Madhavendra Puri was most satisfied and gave him the as a result of that, Ishvara Puri was able to have as his disciple, best disciple, Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Better disciple could not be had because he's the Supreme Lord in the mood of his own devotee. So Bhagavatam especially is magnifying the glories of the devotees. This Narada Muni chastised Vyasadeva. You have not properly described Bhagavan. Here and there, bits and pieces you have described, but you don't. The whole purpose of the Vedas is to this bridge preaching of Vyasadeva, so-called bridge preaching. A little bit of demigod worship here and there, a little bit of yoga, a little bit of karma kanda. But the real aim is to bring people to Krishna consciousness. Everything else is actually useless. This Narada Muni chastised. Jagupsitam. You have, this is abominable, all this stuff you've written, all rubbish. Place of pilgrimage for crows. You didn't directly describe Tadvag Visargo Janatagavitma. Yasmin Pratishtokam Abadhavat Yapi Namanyanantasya Yashankitani Yashchidvanti Yayantikunanti Sada. What the saintly people are interested in, they're not interested in demigod worship or karma kanda or jnana kanda or yoga. Or anything. Kundal, what is this? Kundalini Shakti, releasing it through your different chakras, and so many things may be there in the Vedic literature and supplementary Vedic literature. But those who are actually wise and honest, saintly persons, they will hear about, sing about, and accept the glorification of the unlimited Supreme Lord and nothing else. It is the only purpose of life, is to glorify the Supreme Lord. So Bhagavatam is compiled for that purpose. But Vyasadeva, very intelligently, understanding the purpose of the Lord, glorifies him in relationship to his devotees. How is the Lord to be glorified? Only in relationship with his devotees. How will we know his greatness? In relationship with his devotees. If we don't recognize the devotees, then that's impersonal. Because then the impersonators, they take the absolute truth, they have no name, form, qualities, pastimes, activities, associates. So the Supreme Lord is supreme, or supreme over what? If there are no devotees, then how is he supreme? In relation to whom? The king, and the king without a kingdom, king without any subjects, just the title. In America, I think they have something like that. Some dukes or something from Germany. But they have no duchy and no subjects, and just the name is there. So it's completely meaningless. So king without kingdom, just the type God, we believe in God. And they don't know who he is or what he's doing or what he looks like or who his devotees are. It's completely meaningless. So Bhagavatam describes that which is in relationship with Krishna, most important of which is his devotees, who relish his name, form, qualities, pastimes, and partake in those pastimes. So, Bhagavatam, we find everything about Krishna and his devotees. who are inseparable from him. Sadhavo hridayam mahyam sadunam hridayam tvaham adanyate najananti nahante vyomanagapi. Krishna is told that the devotees, they're in my heart and I'm in their heart because they know nothing but me and I know nothing but them. So this is to be preached. People should know this. That theism doesn't mean just to worship some God who gives us this and that, but beyond theism is to understand God as he likes to be. God with his grandson, in that example of Gladstone. God with his devotees, being himself, doing what he likes to do. This is beyond the standard of theism of this material world. And the materialists, what will they understand? Because they think, I should enjoy and God's function is to help me in my enjoyment. So it's actually a kind of, in the name of believing in God, it's a kind of envy of him. That you should, not recognizing he's the supreme enjoyer, but rather wanting to become a co-enjoyer along with him. But the devotees are so glorious because they have no desire for their own personal enjoyment. They only desire to do everything for Krishna's enjoyment. And therefore, Krishna, seeing that, he reciprocates and provides them with all enjoyment. What will they enjoy? They're not interested in enjoying sense gratification. So they can only enjoy the pleasure of being with Krishna. And Krishna gives that. And sometimes Krishna withdraws himself so that they can, the pleasure of being with him will increase more and more. So this is wonderful. This is far beyond the standard of anything that goes on in the name of religion in this world. Because this is Atma Dharma. This is the actual religion, not some imagined religion. This is actual religion. Means Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. That which religion means to understand what God wants of us, what he wants us to do, and to act accordingly. So what does he want to do? Well, in the beginning, just stop being a complete rascal and do what he says. But later on, if one, stop eating meat and wine and chant his names and so many, follow so many rules and regulations. But later on, or in the advanced stages, if one may actually please him by tying him up. You have to be pretty advanced to do that. Or chastising him in love, not to be imitated. Imitation will cause destruction. But we can see, what is the position of the devotees? Better we worship those devotees. That's more useful, even than Madhbhakta Puja Vyadika. Those who are so great, they can control Krishna by love. Therefore, that verse I quoted yesterday, that Shutim Apare Smritim Mitre Bharatam Manye Bhajantu Bhavabhitaha Ahameha Nandan Vande Yasyalinde Param Brahma. That some they worship the Shuti, others the Smriti, others are very adherent to Mahabharata and all the injunctions therein, because they are very afraid. They fear God. They're afraid. If you don't believe, you'll burn in hell forever, or something like that. They're afraid of material existence. But those who are actually on the platform of love of God, they worship Nanda Maharaj, seeing that that supreme absolute truth, personality of Godhead, is playing like a little child in his courtyard, and sometimes bringing the shoes of Nanda Maharaj on his head, struggling to pick them up. He who supports the whole universe is little boy struggling to put Nanda Maharaj's shoes on his head and toddling and bringing them to him. So Bhagavatam describes pure devotional service. What is the position of the devotee? How glorious is the devotee? It's even more glorious than that of Bhagavan, which is proved by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That he has got everything. Krishna has got everything. Everything is meant for his pleasure, but he's not satisfied. That my devotees, they're experiencing a pleasure more than me. I'm supposed to be the supreme enjoyer, but they're enjoying more than me. What is this bhakti? Let me find out. Then he becomes Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So how wonderful is this? How wonderful is this Krishna consciousness? There's no comparison with any mundane religion. Anything apart from this, it's not transcendental religion. It's not janma karma cha me divyam evam yogeti tatvata. There's no question of understanding the transcendental nature of the Supreme Lord. Unless one comes to the Bhagavad platform, one may have some vague idea of God. It's very vague, and they keep it vague because they don't actually desire to enter into that love of Krishna. That means surrender to him. But you keep it vague. You get something from him, but just kind of vague. Vague means no commitment. But when we know Krishna as he is, then there's no choice but to surrender to him. So this is actually religion. Otherwise, anything which is going on in the name of religion, what is that? Priti vite jato katha dharma nama chale bhagavata kahitaha paripurna chale. Whatever is going on in the name of religion in the world, outside of this Bhagavat principle, according to the Bhagavat, it's all simply cheating. It won't, because in the name of religion, it won't actually help us to re-establish our loving relationship with Krishna. Hare Krishna. I'll finish that. Are there any questions about this? Or comments from the learned devotees?
Thank you for that. That's Maharaj.
I thought the contradiction in Bhagavad Gita is because I didn't let them go that far. I just pointed out the contradictions in all the things they'd told to me so far. And I just kind of chopped them up and threw them out pretty quick. There's an example I gave myself. Krishna says, Aja, Ajopi Sanavyayatma, then Janma Karma Chame Divyam. Then he says, Shriyan Sradharma Vegona Paradharma Vayavahat. It's better to perform your own duty than others' duties. Then sarvadhaman parityaja. Give up all varieties of dharma. So these are apparent contradictions. One has to go deeper to understand.
Maharaj, if I understood correctly, at the beginning of your
class... that point I made is that at different levels of teaching apply. So what is good at one level, and that is required at one level, at another level you come to another standard. Yeah, please.
Maharaj, if I understood you correctly at the beginning of your class, you made the point that we have both the book Bhagavat and the person Bhagavat, and then you mentioned that the person Bhagavat is more important, but then you said that ultimately that person Bhagavat is dependent on the book.
One can be one is Bhagavat. How one is Bhagavat is defined by Bhagavata Shastra.
And then you made the further point that, but stress is sometimes given that the devotee is even more important than the Shastra.
Yeah, Prabhupada would always say that actually, that the person Bhagavat is more important.
And you gave the reconciliation that was because we couldn't understand the book Bhagavat, and therefore we had to get it from the person Bhagavat. You gave the example of pulling the air.
Prabhupada gave.
I had two doubts which arose in my mind when I heard this. I was hoping you could help me to reconcile.
Both things are true, but it's a question of perspective. Just like practically the whole class is on the subject of how Bhagavan is supreme, but the devotee is even more supreme than him. So both things are true. It's a question of perspective.
My two doubts were these. That we find in the... Well, there's two we find in the Shastra that Shastra is always spoken by a person. So although it's quite common that we'll give this, you're giving, Prabhupada does it, our acharyas do it, sadhu, shastra, guru, they give this sort of three-part check and balance system, it seems like it just comes back to the sadhu, because any shastra we have is spoken by a sadhu. It's either Maitreya Uvacha or it's Sanjay Uvacha.
Well, therefore in shastra, the Shruti is always given primary importance. The Ved, which comes from Veda Narayana Sakshat, which comes directly from Narayana. But then even above that is given, Bhagavatam is given more importance. And Bhagavatam we find, Maitreya Uvacha, Shuka Uvacha, and sometimes in there also Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. But then we have to understand what is the position of Bhagavat. That Bhagavat is not that when Maitreya said whatever he said, that came into being. But rather, Bhagavatam is eternal and manifests in various forms given by different devotees at different times. Otherwise, the knowledge that Maitreya gives is not Maitreya's knowledge. But that is an eternal fact. Bhagavatam is eternal and is manifested in different universes, in different times, through different devotees.
My second doubt, thank you, Maharaj. My second doubt was if we're not able to understand what the Shastra says, then we would be unable to judge the character of a person and find out whether they were worthy of being considered sadhu. So it seems like we're left with a
quandary.
Or a logical loop where.
Therefore, what is that? Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. Those were sincere, by the mercy of Krishna, who is within the heart, he will give them the inspiration to find out who is the guru. That some sincerity is required, and Krishna will respond to that. The logical loop is solved by the intervention of Krishna's mercy. As Prabhupada said, one should have some preliminary knowledge. If you want to buy vegetables, you go to the produce store, you don't go to the jewelry shop. You should have some, and you go to the jewelry shop and said, point at some diamonds and say, where are these cabbages from? Doesn't make any sense. It should have some preliminary knowledge, which is inherent in the soul, and which due to agyata sukriti, that knowledge starts to become manifest, just like before the rising of the sun, before the sun actually rises, the light starts to come over the horizon. The darkness begins to clear. So the inherent, by agyata sukriti, or devotionally oriented pious activities done without even one's knowledge, then the inherent knowledge of the jiva, that I am an eternal part and parcel of Krishna, the beginnings of that start to arise within his heart. And therefore, the desire to find sadhu, and the desire to understand sadhu who can direct us to God, desire to understand God, that arises within the heart. And then Krishna at that time arranges for a guru to come and place that seed of the creeper of devotional service in the heart. So that is the factor that resolves the logical loop, is Krishna's mercy on the sincere soul. Sincerity is required. It's not simply a matter of analysis, but sincerity, if that is there, then Krishna will help. We present in this logical way for our own understanding, And for the understanding of persons who may be eligible to come to devotional service, we preach to people, we tell them, and preach, and it may appeal. Yes, this is a very cogent presentation. It seems to make sense. But who will accept this? Who will even listen, and who will accept? The persons who have already, they have some inclination. So the logical presentation, but who will accept is, who will that appeal to? The very good logic that we present, the Krishna conscious philosophy makes very good sense, but even many great scholars, muhyanti yat suryaha, even great intelligent demigods, they may not accept it. But it clicks in the heart of someone who's ready to take to devotional service, who's sincere to take to that. So we find that someone who takes a devotional service, just like they come to our movement and they take up the principles, they don't understand the whole philosophy in the beginning. It's not possible. But nevertheless, they take it up on preliminary faith. And that preliminary faith is generated by association. Generally, that's generated by association with devotees. When they see that that was certainly in my case, that when I saw the devotees, I understood immediately that they've got something which I haven't. They're on a platform of spiritual. They're on a spiritual platform. It's very apparent in the way they were living and the brightness of their faces and the joy. And then they were talking about and about Krishna and living for him. It was quite apparent that they had attained a level of, they were on a spiritual platform which I wasn't on, which I wanted to come to. So faith is created by association with devotees. Ultimately, you see, the faith is required. Simply logic alone can't take us anywhere in any field. Even if we are to walk down the street, we have to have faith that the pavement, the sidewalk in front of us won't collapse. Now, that means say, well, that's, why do you have to have faith? Because you think you don't need faith, because no, whoever heard of a sidewalk collapsing? So, but we can say it's reasonable faith, because when you see it, it looks solid, and so many other people have walked on it, and there's no sign saying danger, and so it's reasonable to. But ultimately, it is faith. We have faith that the earth will support us as we walk ahead. When we drink water, we have faith that someone hasn't put some cyanide in it. We have faith that it's good for us. It's beneficial. So everything we do at every moment rests on faith. But there's reasonable faith and unreasonable faith. People say, well, this religion, it's just faith. It's not just faith. There is faith. But it's reasonable faith, at least in the Bhagavad culture, it's reasonable faith, which upon which philosophy is expounded. And that's true in every field of knowledge. If you, just like if you, even the most simple mathematics, 1 plus 1 equals 2, one has to accept the axiom that the figure 1 represents an indeterminate object. So one has to have faith in, one has to accept the process of mathematics before you can even enter into it. If you say, well, it's just a line on a piece of paper, what's that got to do with anything? It is, it's just a line on a piece of paper, but because it's an accepted, within mathematics, it's an accepted as an axiom that this figure, this straight line, represents, it abstractly represents any object. So then you can enter into mathematics. And if you don't accept, then you can't enter into it. So in any discipline, there are certain axioms which are given, which have to be accepted. Otherwise, you can't even begin. If you go to the class and the teacher says that now today I'm going to teach you calculus, you say, "Well, I don't believe in calculus." So many people, they believe, they've gone through all this and they've applied it practically. But if we say, "Well, it's just just some funny line and some numbers, and then what progress can we make if we immediately reject? That we can't understand it, we may just reject. It doesn't mean anything to me. People would say, religion, it doesn't mean anything to you. And that's your insufficiency. Not that the subject is lacking, but it's our insufficiency in approaching it. So if we have patience in the teacher. It looks like some squiggles and some numbers, but then if we have patience, the teacher explains this, and then we can also take it up. But in the beginning, we have to have faith. In the beginning, when we see the calculus written out, it doesn't mean anything to us. But that it means nothing to us, that means it's our insufficiency, not that the process is flawed. We have to learn it from someone who knows. That's all. So it's the same in spiritual life also.
Thank you, Maharaj. Could I ask another question?
I can, that's what I came here for, I suppose, okay. to discuss all these topics. As yata shakti, according to my ability.
You said during the class that Mother Yashoda is binding Krishna, and that some people are not seeing Krishna as God, they're seeing Krishna in a more intimate way as He Himself is most naturally, most intrinsically. Mm. And then you said, but we see Krishna as God. Mm. You made this point. Explaining that we should have some vision of Krishna's Aishwarya, if that's appropriate for us.
Mm.
So I have read in various books written by our acharyas where we're actually cautioned against seeing Krishna according to His Godhood or according to His Sarvajyata or His Aishwarya.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if you could comment.
Well, when I said we, that means we who are coming up from the conditioned platform. For to enter into that Vraja Leela, then knowledge of God. Of course, the Vrajavasis, they also know Krishna is Purushottam. They also know that, but it's not very important to them. That He is their darling child, that is their overwhelming attitude towards Him. But if we, if one is on the platform of love of God, or then to stress so much His Aishwarya will diminish that free flow of love for Him. But first there should be, first we should give up our free flow of attraction to sense gratification. Otherwise, if we prematurely, before we come to the platform of attraction for Krishna, if we try to see Him as the only in terms of His being lover, son, friend, then because our attitude is one of Ishvara, aham, aham bhogi, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer, then we will take Krishna as the object of our enjoyment. So first we have to be purged from that diseased attitude and recognize that He is the controller, He is the enjoyer, I am subordinate, I am meant for His enjoyment. Then only it is favorable to cultivate the when one is fully purged of the desire to enjoy separately from Krishna, then it is suitable to even forget that He is God for His enjoyment. So that we can become more enjoyable to Him, it is good to forget that He is God. But if we're still thinking in terms of our own enjoyment, and we don't recognize that He is the supreme controller, He is the supreme enjoyer, then, like everything else, we will take Him as an object of our enjoyment. And this is why premature jumping into Vraj Leela is not recommended, because then that's called sahajya, taking everything very cheaply, without giving up the attitude of personal enjoyment to try to enter into Vraja Leela. And what happens is they take it as their own enjoyment. And you see that they'll judge. What is a good, they say, it was a good kirtan, I really enjoyed it. Oh, that was a really good drama of Krishna Leela. I really enjoyed it. We hear this all the time. But if I enjoyed it, then who, it's not meant for our enjoyment. It was a really good kirtan. How can we say it's a good kirtan? If we feel that, if we can sense that, yes, that was enjoyable to Krishna. So these rules and regulations are there not to be discarded. Because we have the tendency to act in a manner for our own enjoyment, even in kirtan. And say, oh yes, I'm enjoying so much. But no, it should be what is pleasing to Krishna. We have to see what is pleasing to Krishna. Otherwise we become sahajya. I shall enjoy Krishna. But by this attitude in the name of Krishna consciousness, one falls into gross sense gratification, because we cannot enjoy Krishna. It is not our dharma to enjoy Krishna. It's our dharma to serve Krishna. So one can enjoy Krishna when one is free from the desire to enjoy Krishna. Bhukti mukti spriha yavat pishachi fiti vartate. Tavat bhakti sukhasyatra katam abhyudayo bhavet. As long as the witch-like desires for bhukti, material enjoyment, and mukti, liberation from the material world without surrender to Krishna, as long as these desires are in the heart, then the enjoyment of bhakti can never arise within the heart. So yes, Krishna consciousness is enjoyable. But if we think, I shall enjoy, then we miss the point. This dridrishya vichar, it's a big subject. Maybe I won't go into it now. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, this is the basis of everything I have to teach. Just to understand, who is the seer and who is the seen? Who is the enjoyer and who is to be enjoyed? It's the basis of everything I have to say.
Drig
drisha
vichar. Drig drisha vichar. Who is the seer, who is to be seen? Can I ask another question,
Ma? Go on. You may go on all day. I know what you're like. You want to sit? You look like a tiger is going to jump on me. You like to sit? Like to sit a little relaxed. You have a bad back, or what?
Yeah, I want to accentuate the curve of my back.
I'm doing something like that too.
You mentioned some anonymous person who had found fault with the name Radha Parthasarthi. The Delhi deities were named. And I was wondering, a doubt arose in my mind, that Rupa Goswami and other of our acharyas, including Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, at least according to Krishna Das Kaviraj, they make a distinction between Krishna after he crosses the Kuru Ghat and Krishna on the Vrindavan side. And that becomes Vasudeva Krishna, who has four arms, and who is Mathura Dishu Dwarkadish. And it is not the same Krishna.
Not the same in one sense, but in another sense, yes, the same Krishna.
Not the same in the sense that that form is no longer attractive to the Vrijvasis, which is why there's this extended conversation between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Vallabha Bhatta in the Madhya Leela, and also that very well-known pastime when the gopis see Narayan. They offer pranams and ask for Krishna, as it's also mentioned by our acharyas. So, if someone was to present these arguments, I was familiar with where Prabhupada mentions the Ladini Shakti is there in a conversation with Chaitananda Akshayananda when they questioned him on this point. But if someone did not accept that conversation and someone presented these arguments, I was wondering how you'd respond.
We see, that's also mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita, how Vasudev Krishna, no, that's Brihad Bhagavatamrita, is when he hears about his Vrindavan pastimes, he becomes overwhelmed by that. So Krishna can never forget Radharani. She is not attracted to his form outside Vrindavan, but he is attracted to her form within Vrindavan. He never forgets her. This Prabhupada has revealed. And one thing we should also bear in mind, that Prabhupada is also an acharya, so we have to take what he says seriously also. We shouldn't just think that he's someone who joined the Gauriya Math and he went to the West and somehow he struck bingo. He's also an acharya, so we should take his comments very seriously also, theological comments. For someone who is in all terms, he may think himself more realized or something like this, but actually very junior to Prabhupada, to make slighting comments on Prabhupada's theological statements is very inappropriate, actually. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. We shouldn't think there's Rupa Goswami, there's Jiva Goswami, there's Sanatana Goswami, there's Vishwanath Chakravarti, and Prabhupada's in a different category. That's a great mistake. So, for us midgets to try to bring the statements of Rupa Goswami to contradict what Prabhupada says is foolish. Rather, we should see, if there's any apparent dichotomy, we should see how to harmonize that. Not to say, oh, you see, Prabhupada, I understand Rupa Goswami better than Prabhupada. This is rascal, but foolish.
I have another question.
I know.
But I also want to offer a comment to what you said. I found a very nice verse in the Love of Bhagavatamrita where Rupa Goswami says that when you encounter two contradictory verses in Shastra, your reconciliation should show how they're both true and not minimize one from
the right, other.
So this hermeneutical principle of reconciling statements without placing lesser importance on one is actually given by Rupa Goswami. You mentioned that Prahlad and Dhruv and Ambarish were glorified in this purport because of their stature as great devotees, and that their kingly stature was not relevant.
Not particularly for their kingly stature, although because they're devotees, that was all in relationship to Krishna. But it's not, there may be so many kings who are not glorious, so their glory comes from them being devotees. And part of that glory was that in their kingly, their discharge of kingly duties in Krishna consciousness.
Here's my question. If someone was to say in the Bhagavad Gita, then we have Imran Rajar Sharo Vidhu, and we have Raja Vidya Raja Bhukhya, which we render as the king of knowledge, but which could also be very easily rendered as the knowledge of kings, the secret of kings. We see this type of glorification throughout the Shastra, that this is the knowledge of kings.
Of Rajarshis, yes.
Yes.
Not of Raja Duskritis, because they're rishis. Rishi means who sees the Vedic truth. So such Rajas are glorified. Not this Raja Duskriti. Not so. That they are rishi, that is the point. Otherwise, to be a Raja in itself is of no particular value. It's their Krishna consciousness that is glorified. And generally, that was handed down among the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas. King Puna, Brahmana Punya. Bhakta Raja Shiyastata Anityam Asukam Lokam. Imam prapya bhajasvamam. Krishna says that it comes out of the Papa Yoni verse. What is that verse? Mami Patavya Pashritya Yipisyu Papa Yonaya Striyo Vaishas Tata Shudras Tipiyanti Paramgatim. He says that anyone who worships me, even of sinful birth, whether women, Vaishas or Shudras, they can attain me. And King Punar Brahmana Punya. And what do you speak of those pious Brahmanas? King Punar, same word as is given here. King Punar, what do you speak of? The pious Brahmanas and Bhakta Rajashiyastata, the devotee kings, who in this miserable temporary, having attained such a position in this miserable temporary world, they worship me. So, traditionally, these higher castes means that they were elevated in spiritual consciousness. Generally, that was the culture maintained by family tradition. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.